There's a culture war going on in this country. We can no longer remain silent on the issues that affect us all. Decisions we make now will determine our future. But how do we engage with the culture in a way that honors Jesus? How do we rise above the noise to know what is right and what is true? It's time to bring God back into the conversation. It's time to reconnect. Here's Carmen.
Welcome, friends. I'm Carmen LaBurge, and this is The Reconnect, where we're putting God in His place, back where He belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So how do we do that? How do we enter into the conversations of the day as the ambassadors of Jesus Christ? How do we speak the mind of Christ on the matters of the day? Let's face it, people don't need just another piece of our mind, but they do very much need the peace that comes with the mind of Christ. So you and I are just the people to give it to them. How do we cultivate it? We cultivate it by being people whose lives are saturated with the Word of God. We cultivate the mind of Christ by allowing the Holy Spirit to work within us moment by moment, and allowing Christ to bring every thought captive to Him. So are you doing that? Are you actively pursuing the mind of Christ on the matters of the day? If not, then you got to zip it, because you got nothing to say about what's going on in the world unless you are going to speak as an ambassador of the kingdom of heaven in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. However, if you are a person who's cultivated the mind of Christ in the matters of the day, then it's your responsibility to get off the sidelines and into the conversations of the day in a way that glorifies and honors Jesus. Hey, we invite you to connect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. While you're there, sign up for the email newsletter. You're going to get lots of information and commentary that we simply don't have time to share here in this hour. You also should check out Reconnect on Facebook. Let us know what you're thinking about on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. All right, folks, it's been a busy week, and it's only Thursday. So we are going to talk today about the National Day of Prayer. We are going to talk today about the U.S. House of Representatives healthcare reform bill. We are going to talk about the President of the United States signing an executive order related to religious liberty. But first, we are going to talk not just about a person who we've talked about on the show before, but we're going to actually get to talk with her. So if you're a person who's been listening to The Reconnect for a while, you already know the name Melissa Dohm. Melissa Dohm was 20 years old when she had a call from her now ex-boyfriend to meet up. It was to gain closure in their relationship, but that is not that's not what happened. And so I'm going to let Melissa tell her own story. You will recognize her story if you are a person who pays attention to the Below the Fold on our show, because we talked about her story as it was unfolding. We talked about her story when she got married, and now we're here live with her in the studio to invite her to tell her own story. So, Melissa, welcome to The Reconnect.
Thank you for having me. I'm just so honored to be here with you today, Carmen, and to share my story. It's really such a blessing. As you said, yes, I have been through this horrific tragedy that just over 5 years ago completely transformed my life. But I would never want to go through what I went through again. But with where I am today, I wouldn't change it, because I feel it's God saved me to be a voice for those who have been experiencing domestic violence, or anyone who feels that they may somehow deserve abuse, or, you know, aren't aware of the warning signs. So, yes, just over 5 years ago, I got a call from my ex-boyfriend, and this phone call woke me up in the middle of the night. And I had broke up with my ex-boyfriend 3 months before this phone call because of abuse. It was ongoing verbal, emotional, mental abuse that escalated into physical violence, and I was finally able to get away from him. But that's not where, clearly, my story ended. On this day, January 24th, 2012, I received these phone calls and answered. I quit, you know, ignoring them. Finally, I answered, "What do you want? You know, why are you calling me?" And he said, "After everything we've been through, can you just give me a hug? I'll leave you alone forever and never bother you again." He had wanted closure from the terrible end of our relationship. And we dated for two years, and I was completely uneducated about domestic violence or dating abuse or the warning signs. I didn't know about control and jealousy. I didn't understand. I just confused all of this behavior with him just being a jerk. And so I walked outside. You know, he begged and cried for this hug, and so I did ultimately walk outside. I ignored one of the most important things that God gives each and every one of us, and that is our intuition. Mm. I ignored my intuition that night, and it was the biggest, greatest mistake of my life. So before I carry on, just one of the biggest pieces of advice is to listen to that inner voice. You know, God speaks to us through our center of our abdomen and tells us what's right or wrong. And ignoring it was definitely the biggest mistake of my life.
And I think we call it, you know, we refer to it as like a, you know, what's your gut telling you,
yes,
right? And so I think what you're saying to women is, hey, if your gut is telling you that there's danger,
yes,
if your gut is telling you to not draw closer, follow your gut. Follow
your
gut
instinct. You must listen to it. It's so important. And as I said, I was a young 20-year-old naive girl, and I ignored it. And so I went outside, and my ex reached his arms around me for a hug that he was crying and begging for, but he actually had a switchblade in his hand already and squeezed me tight and flipped open the knife, started stabbing me first in the back of the shoulder, then in the back of my head, and then here on the side of my face. And it wasn't even until the one hit the side of my face and my mouth filled with blood that I even knew what was going on. Beyond that, it was just a fight for my life. I don't need to go into gruesome details. It's pretty horrific, but it was truly a fight for my life. And there was 32 stab wounds total. My facial nerve was severed. My skull was broken. Nose was broken. My jaw was broken with multiple teeth knocked out. But by the grace of God and many miracles, I sit here with you now.
Yeah, so let me just pause and remind people, we're hearing the testimony, the witness of Melissa Dome. She's now Melissa Dome Hill. We're going to get to that in just a minute. But at this point in the story, some kids intervened. I mean, I'm going to use the word intervened. They at least called 911.
It was my angels. I know they are. They were across the street from my mom's house where this happened in the park. And they were two young teenagers. They heard me screaming and were so brave and courageous to intervene. And I've met them. They chose to stay anonymous. And I asked them, like, you know, can I tell the world about you? You're my hero. You saved my life. You're my angels. And they said the only person really we want to be known to is you. And I kept that. It just meant so much to me. But I asked them, you know, why were they out there? And they said that they were going to leave an hour before and they weren't sure why they were there. And I said, well, God placed you there. You know, they were actually the only people that called for help. The young man and his girlfriend ran over. The guy actually pulled him off me, and the young girl called 911. And after my ex saw them, he actually went back to his truck and got a second knife, returned back to me, and began to attack me further. And that's when he actually thought he took my life and left in his truck. And in these moments, right before he left and drove away, I actually felt that God helped me and carried me. I felt that I was touched by angels, and I know it, actually. I know it with every ounce of my soul that angels helped me and carried me out of that road. So he was driving away in his truck, and I was left laying there, and something inside me said that he's going to run me over, and that's how he's going to finish it. So I said, I have to get up, and I was able to stand, and I started walking, and I thought, how is this happening? Like, how am I even walking? And I know that it was that angels helped me and got me out of the road. And I know this because as soon as I landed next to the cement block that I was trying to get next to for safety, I couldn't move a muscle. And that solidified to me that God helped me out of this situation and got me to safety on the side of the road. And that's where I just began to pray and plead with God to please save my life. And I just kept praying. I'm 20 years old. You know, just, I have so much life to live. Don't let my mother walk out here to my murder scene. I said, I can't let my mom see me out here like this and know that I came out here. It just was breaking my heart. And just when I thought I wasn't going to make it, I felt myself taking my final breath. I prayed to God to please forgive me for my sins and take me to heaven. I said, if this is your wish, Lord, please just take me to heaven. And at that exact moment is when a police officer shined her light on me. And again, I felt a rush of life come back to me, and I was able to, I still feel, and once another miracle, God gave me my voice back, and I was able to state, my name is Melissa Dome, my attacker is Robert Burton, and he left in a red Ford pickup truck. It was red.
Wow.
And I was able to state all of that. And I know that God gave me those words because, again, I would have been this random victim in the road. I had no identification. Nobody knew I was outside my mom's house. Nobody knew this was a domestic violence situation, not a random attack in the park or a random girl that was attacked. This was, you know, manipulation of my ex-boyfriend who convinced me to meet him. And just, I want to briefly mention that the period of time after leaving an abusive relationship is actually the most dangerous and volatile time. It is when a majority of murders occur, and it's a horrifying trend we're seeing over and over called breakup violence, especially with teenagers. You know, parents need to have the conversation with their teenagers that about dating violence. 1 in 3 teenagers are currently victims of some form of abuse in their relationship. So when you think of the number 1 and 3, it's very startling and it's heartbreaking. So we just have to make sure you get that conversation going about dating violence and remind, if you have a young kid in your life that might not understand how breakups go and how, you know, the dynamics of relationships and ending them, you know, you just need to show them, you know, in the bigger picture of life, this is very small. You know, this high school boyfriend or girlfriend, you will be able to move forward and get on with your life. You just have to let them go. You don't have that power and control over someone else.
Hey, friends, we're talking to Melissa Dome. You can actually read her victim impact statement at Hands Across the Bay. That's a website that you can visit, handsacrossthebay.org. You can follow Melissa on Twitter, and you can connect directly with her. If this is a story that's impacting you, if you've got questions as a young person who is experiencing this kind of fear, or you know, God forbid, you are in a relationship where you are being mistreated. We want to be quick to say, you know, you are a person who's made in the image of God, and you do not deserve to be treated as anything less than a precious child of God. And so as Melissa tells us what happened next, because obviously it wasn't ultimately a murder scene, right? And you are not the person who got up and carried yourself away from that situation. So help arrived. And so we want to talk about those first responders, and then we want to talk about how God has really redeemed your story and proven himself out to be so faithful in this narrative.
Yes, most definitely. God has worked in my life in incredible ways. I feel blessed every day just to wake up and know that he's given me this chance to share my testimony and give him the glory through all of it, because I know the only reason I am here is by God's miracles. There's no reason my ex-boyfriend, he did not in any way, you know, try to save me. He tried very hard to take my life, and it's only by the grace of God that I'm here. And there is a silver lining, as you said, to my story that I'd like to share. I understand and I know not all men are this way. There, you know, not all relationships are this way. That's why it's so important to educate yourself about domestic violence and healthy relationships. But, you know, you deserve real love. And I have learned what real love is. This horrific night also led me to meet my husband. He actually was one of the first responders on my call that horrific night. He is the firefighter EMT that set up the landing zone and helped load me into it. It's real. It's true. It's my own little personal fairy tale. It's really incredible. Sometimes I think back, like, I can't believe this is my life when I think about really how we met and where we are today, over 4 years later and 2 months married. Today is actually our 2 month anniversary of marriage.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So we met 1 year later after the attack. It was a surprise, and I feel that God brought us together just when the timing was right in our life. And if I would have met him any earlier or any later, you know, God knows the timing in your life of when, you know, just when you're so happy and confident on your own and your heart is full, and that is when I feel like, you know, God will place who is supposed to be in your life. And that is exactly what he did for me. I was speaking for the first time ever as an advocate against domestic violence for a luncheon, and they had the first responders there to surprise me. So Cameron, my husband, was one of them, and we met there at the luncheon and hugged and cried, and my family was all there, and it was just so amazing to say thank you directly to the people that save your life. It's such a humbling experience. It's just really incredible to be able to hug them and thank them. You know, it's a thankless job. First responders, police officers, trauma surgeons, they just do their job every day, but they are truly changing lives. And so I was able to meet him, and he invited my mom and I to dinner at the fire department to meet the entire crew, because some of them were upset that they weren't all get to be there. So that's where we really got to know each other. And as time went on, you know, talking back and forth over the next few months, he asked me on my official first date to go with him. That was in December of 2012. And so all within the same year, January 2012, I almost lost my life due to domestic violence. And as in December of the same year, December 2012, I would meet my future husband. So God has definitely a plan. And I feel that this horrible, horrific attack, you know, as I said, I would never want to go through it again, but it's truly led me to find my purpose that God has for me. I feel God has a purpose for each and every single person on this earth, and you cannot live out the purpose of someone else, just of your own. And I feel that God truly placed this in my path because I feel it's my duty as a survivor to speak out now that I'm here and I'm well and God's restored my life in so many ways that I can speak in high schools and educate our youth about what I wish I knew then, you know, what I know now. And I have dedicated my life and I work as an advocate at Hands Across the Bay. So as you said before, if you'd like to learn more about us, it's handsacrossthebay.org. And we have a prevention program to speak in local schools. And I actually just started traveling nationally and speaking as well, just stepping into that realm. I feel it's the next chapter of God has put into my life, you know, now that I'm married and I just graduated college last year. So I feel the next step really is just advocating on a wider scale and taking my story and giving God the glory as I go, because that's really the meaning behind everything.
All right. Melissa, is there a book or is there a forthcoming book?
There is a book in the works. Yes, I know that is.
Because I'm thinking to myself, my publisher friends who are listening are like, I want her name and phone number because that's a book. It is a testimony of such horror and such hope. And I know that this is radio, so people can't see you. However, we are broadcasting this on Facebook Live for all our friends out there. So you can either be following this on the ReConnect's Facebook page, or you can be following it on Melissa's Facebook page as well. But for those of you who are listening, this is a person who is obviously beautiful in terms of her heart and her soul, but she's also a beautiful, physically beautiful person. And so the redemptive work that has taken place, right?
More miracles.
It is. The list
really
of miracles
incredible.
Is really incredible.
I'll tell you quickly one,
please.
If you don't mind.
Absolutely.
The attack did leave me with facial paralysis. So I was looking in the mirror thinking this man stole my smile. You know, it's hard to accept that you're physically different. And I feel that God healed me from the inside out. So the first few years was definitely a healing journey of finding forgiveness and letting all the pain go and the hatred. But then as years passed, God led me right to a place in Boston. It's the Facial Nerve Center. And I was actually able to have surgery for free through a program for domestic violence survivors at this hospital, Mass Eye and Ear. And they actually transplanted nerves from my legs and put them into my face, and then a calf from my thigh also into my face. And now little by little, the nerve has been regenerating and I'm like me again.
Yeah, she has dimples, you guys. I don't even know how else to tell you.
It's a true miracle. You know, when a nerve is severed, but God, led me right to the place. And then it's always, how am I going to get to this place? God would always provide a way. It's just when you think there's no way I'm going to get there or this is even possible, God will always provide. And that's because I have faith and I give him the glory in all that I do. You know, blessings go up, or prayers go up, blessings come down. That's what they say. Mm. So I just send my prayers up and my faith is so strong in knowing that through this journey, sometimes I have literally felt like God has held me in his hands. Like just when I think I can't move on to the next day or how am I going to get through this? This is just, you know, too much to bear. God would always provide a way. And I know that the same for anybody listening. If they ever feel like, you know, they have no hope or they don't know what to do next, just lean on God and, let him help you through. He will.
Yeah. And God's people as well. So if you are a person who is in need of support, Hands Across the Bay wants to help. There's lots of support out there for domestic violence victims. And there's a domestic violence hotline. I bet you know that number off the top of your head. If not, Jessica can Google it really quick.
1-800-1100. Oh my goodness.
That's okay. See, we're both through.
Yeah,
both
I know it.
Well, so we've had Autumn Miles on the show as well, and she has a ministry that is also domestic violence survivors. The two of you would very much enjoy one another, so we'll be sure and we connect you with Autumn Miles and her ministry. She's in Texas. But I just want to thank you, Melissa, for being with us today on the ReConnect. Thank you for your testimony. Thank you for how your life is making the gospel beautiful and visible to other people, which is our calling in life. So thank you for being a person who is doing that and living out the redemptive reality in your marriage, in your family, in your community, and now for all of us nationwide. So her name is Melissa Dome. Again, you should follow her on Twitter. You should check out what they're doing at Hands Across the Bay. And if you're looking for a domestic violence survivor to come and give your teenagers or the women in your church some hope, we would certainly direct you to Melissa and her ministry. Melissa, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
It's really an honor. I appreciate it.
All right, friends. So in Washington today, a couple of things have taken place that we want to touch on before we go to the break. And that's because after the break, our friend Robert Nicholson is going to be here to talk with us about the peace process between Israel and Palestine. He actually had the opportunity to meet with President Abbas of the state of Palestine, or the Palestinian National Authority. And so he's going to be here with us to discuss the ongoing, what we would describe as the elusive search for peace in the Middle East. And that's going to happen right after the break. So I want to touch on a couple of things that have happened this morning. First of all, today is the National Day of Prayer, and I'm hoping that you had the opportunity to participate in a National Day of Prayer service. I had the opportunity to be in Tampa, Florida, and to be with our friend and colleague Lee Strobel, who was the speaker at the National Day of Prayer event here. We were privileged to be with the Salem Radio folks at the Faith Talk 570-910 table. And so it's always, and that's a studio that we're broadcasting from this afternoon. So it's always a wonderful opportunity to sit down at table fellowship with other believers. And it's always an opportunity to gather with one another in prayer. And so I just want to lift that up to you. If you have not, on this National Day of Prayer, taken the time to pray for our nation, to pray for our leaders, to pray for the justice system and those involved in it, to pray for first responders and the men and women in our military who are on the front lines every day, not just defending our freedoms, but advancing the cause of freedom in the world. If you haven't taken time today to pray for our educators and to pray for our civil servants, if you have not taken the time today to pray for each and every system and aspect of what it means to live as a nation, as a free people, with the kinds of freedoms that we enjoy, not just the freedom of religion and the freedom of speech, but friends, we're like genuinely free people. And if you haven't taken time today to praise God for that and to thank Him for it, it's time. It's time. It's time to do that. And then it's also time to, you know, come before the Lord and lift up your concerns about each and every one of those self-same realities. And so we talk often about the division in our nation. We talk often about the concerns that we have about the way things are or are not working nationally and locally. But there's times when we forget we ought to be praying the news. Right? We consume the news, we react to the news, we talk about the news. When was the last time you prayed the news? So I'm going to really encourage you, instead of just getting agitated, get activated. And I'm not just saying get activated in terms of like going and marching around with a sign. I'm saying get on your knees and go before the Lord and implore Him about the things that you're reading about in the newspaper or hearing about on the television or the things that populate your Twitter feed. You may feel paralyzed and you may feel inadequate to address what's going on in North Korea, but guess what? God is not inadequate. God's arm is not too short. God's hand is not too weak. God is as interested in the people in North Korea and their salvation and spending eternity in a relationship with them that's redeemed in Jesus Christ as He is interested in you and I and the United States of America. God is just as interested in people who live in places that you and I will never visit and who have names that you and I would never be able to pronounce and who live in circumstances you and I would never be able to imagine. The thousands of people who are going to die today in Africa due to the famine that is now run rampant across four nations of North Africa, God knows their names. He knows the numbers of hairs on their heads. And so when you read the news and you feel anxious about it or you feel overwhelmed by it, have you prayed about it? Have you prayed the news today? And so that's my encouragement to you during the break. You can go to reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can see what we've posted there. We'd love for you to engage with us in this ministry. But I really want to compel you, if you haven't done so yet already, on this National Day of Prayer, take some time to pray the news, the things that you know that are going on in the world. Take an opportunity right now to pray about those things.
Hey, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Robert Nicholson. He is one of the publishers of Providence, a journal of Christianity and American foreign policy. We're going to be talking about brokering peace in the Middle East. This is The Reconnect. I'm Carmen. We'll be right back. Indeed, to God alone belongs the highest praise. Let's never forget that. I'm Carmen LaBurge. This is The Reconnect, where we're putting God in his place, back where he belongs, right in the middle of every conversation. So we are talking about what people are talking about. We are equipping you to be an ambassador of the kingdom of God in the midst of the kingdoms of this world. We certainly invite you to connect with us online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can always let me know what you're thinking about on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. All right, so we have talked on occasion with Robert Nicholson. He's the executive director of the Philos Project. It's an American nonprofit that seeks to promote positive Christian engagement in the Middle East. Robert is also the co-publisher of Providence, a journal of Christianity and American foreign policy. You can check all of that out at philosproject.org, and you can follow Robert on Twitter at RW_Nicholson_. So that's RW_. Robert, welcome back to The Reconnect.
Hi, Carmen. Thanks for having me.
So we have you on today because you are the guy who we know best who has a perspective on the Trump administration and the possibility for brokering peace in the Middle East. On Tuesday night, you actually
met with President Abbas. The President of the United States met with him yesterday. Give us the groundwork. We are not people who think every day about Hamas. We don't think every day about what's happening between Israel and the people of Palestine or Palestinians. See, I even think that language-wise we need some help. So you're telling me that this week Hamas released a new charter for the first time in decades, and that charter does away with its demand to eliminate the nation of Israel. That seems pretty significant. Give us some insight on the factors and the dynamics that are at play in the peace negotiations.
Right, thank you. So, you know, Israelis and Palestinians, this is an old story. It's been very violent and problematic. About a quarter century ago, we started this thing called the peace process, where the two sides basically agreed to sit down and let's actually try to work this out. There was a little bit of progress made. There was a creation of a Palestinian government, actually. People don't know there's an actual Palestinian government inside the Holy Land, inside right alongside Israel and West Bank and Gaza. But beyond that, not a lot has happened. In fact, it's kind of degenerated into a stalemate. And so, you know, here we are 25 years later. You know, George W. Bush tried, Bill Clinton before that, of course, Barack Obama, and nothing's happening. People on the street are very hopeless. Very few people are feeling any confidence in this process. And along comes Donald Trump. Donald Trump is, of course, like everyone who came before him, trying to restart this process. And as I saw someone describe him as our deal maker in chief, he sees this as the ultimate deal, and he wants to make it happen, bringing a very different approach, I think, to this question. Hamas is a competing Palestinian government based in Gaza who has been publicly committed to destroying Israel completely, no ifs, ands, or buts. And this week, because they're feeling pressure from pretty much everyone, they did really a sort of a PR stunt, kind of reframed their charter, which used to be extremely absurd and violent, and now it's only slightly less so. So this is really a reaction to a Trump administration, to pressure even from Arab states who actually see an alignment with Israel these days, who are saying to Hamas, look, you guys gotta play ball here. And so Hamas trying not to compromise their principles, but trying to play to the world audience, released sort of an updated version of their constitution, as it were. And really, if you read it carefully, you'll see that really nothing has changed. They've just described it a little differently. So this is the moment that we're at right now.
So do you feel like when they, you know, when Hamas puts in a document that they no longer demand the elimination of the nation of Israel, you think that actually changes hearts and minds of people who now for generations have been cultivating a hate of Israel that's based on its elimination?
Yeah, well, this is the problem, Carmen, is that, you know, so much of the discussion about making peace is done between diplomats who are, you know, careerists, they're professionals, they're quite moderate most of the time on both sides. But the problem is the people. You know, Israeli Jews feel incredibly unsafe. You know, violence is not something in the past, it's something that happened this week. I mean, random stabbing attacks against Jews by Arabs. So Israelis are just not feeling any faith at this point. Things could change, but not feeling much faith. The Israeli, you know, the Jewish people. And on the other side, the Palestinian people, for decades, really since they've been, you know, a people, have been trained that Israel is the enemy. It's the Zionist entity that has taken over their homeland. And of course, you find people who are committed to peace, but their voices are drowned out by these people who are looking around. They're saying, what peace? What peace has brought us absolutely nothing. My life is still terrible. You know, our roads are still unpaved. Like, this, the only solution to this is armed struggle. And so this is, you know, as people try to restart this process, the big question is not necessarily, okay, what's going to be the solution for Jerusalem? And what about the you know, there's all these issues that everyone has to deal with. It's, will the leaders be able to get the faith of their people to actually make this deal happen? President Trump seems to think so, and the other two presidents involved seem to think so, but this is an open question going forward.
Okay, when you say President Trump, we know who that is, and when you say the other two presidents, tell us who you're talking about.
I should make a correction. So President Mahmoud Abbas, he's the president, he's the Palestinian president, he's their leader. And on the Israeli side, you have, of course, Prime Minister, not President, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who is the leader of Israel. These are the three players at the table. Hamas is actually also in this discussion, but we've decided as a group not to allow them at the table because they're not playing nice. That people could try to change that with this new charter, but as of now they're excluded from this process. It's just these three that are sitting together making negotiations.
So President Trump, here was his statement. I know you've heard this. He said, "I've always heard that perhaps the toughest deal to make is the deal between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Let's see if we can prove them wrong." He basically insisted, "Hey, we're going to get it done." Do you think that he perceives this just as a land deal? And if so, why does that come up short in terms of what all of the issues are?
So look, he's a real estate guy. He's a deal maker. This is what he does, arbitrating, mediating. This is what he wants to do, and he said so in his press statement. So I think he's definitely coming at it with his experience driving him, certainly in terms of real estate, in terms of land, but also just in terms of kind of business and economics, which on one hand, you sort of look at the situation and you say, look, you know, not for nothing, President Trump, but there's a lot more going on than just real estate here. This is a deep-seated issue. On the other hand, I think there's something important that he brings because he's pragmatic, because he's not an ideologue. He's trying, he does want to make compromises and make this happen. And for Palestinians, certainly, people who, again, you know, billions and billions of American taxpayer dollars and world aid dollars have gone to this Palestinian government, this Palestinian authority, and almost all of it gets lost along the way. Like, people on the street are not seeing their lives get better, which makes them desperate, makes them say violence is the only solution. Peace has brought us nothing. Violence gets us somewhere. If Trump does try to build a Palestinian state from the ground up, as opposed to, you know, what everybody else has been doing from the top down, you know, actually building roads and schools and infrastructure, and Palestinians begin to see, wow, this actually is, this pays off. Like, jobs come from this and development comes from this. There is a chance that that approach, which is a new approach, will actually make a difference. So it's unclear how it's going to play out. But in terms of getting the people on board, if the Palestinian side, which I would argue holds the key to the peace, the Israelis are ready. If the Palestinian people begin to see tangible, you know, benefits in their lives, they actually may begin to have a little more faith in the process and may become less committed to violence as a result.
So it's curious that you say that that's new. This may be one of the opportunities for President Trump to actually demonstrate that he is Presbyterian, because this is actually a Presbyterian thing that Presbyterians have been trying for a while. So we'll see. Hey, friends, you need to go to philosproject.org. You also need to check out the Providence. It's a journal. It's called A Journal of Christianity and American Foreign Policy. One of the things you guys recently did was these panel discussions, and now you've posted the videos for those. Those are excellent. I mean, if people want, if you want a real education on the intersection of the Christian worldview and what's going on internationally and our foreign policy, you guys got to check out not only Providence Magazine, but what these folks are posting in terms of these educational videos. Can they get all of that if they go to philosproject.org?
It's on philosproject.org, and we have a tab, and you'll find Providence on there. And whatever we don't have there will be on the Providence website, which is a little bit separate. So it's philosproject.org, and you'll find the link to Providence where you'll see all the videos right there for you. Also podcasts. We have all kinds of great stuff, Carmen. It's all there right there for you for free.
Yeah, and it's so helpful. I mean, I even just saw the other day, you know, you were posting like a really helpful, insightful response to Secretary of State Tillerson's, you know, comments about, hey, these are our core values, but, you know, that's values. Those are over here. Here's our policies. Mm-hmm. And I even think that just in learning how to listen to and hear what people are saying at the intersection of America's foreign policy and the Christian faith, you are helping people do that in a really significant way. So thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for being with us today on the Reconnect.
Thanks, Carmen. Take care.
All right, friends, that is not the only thing going on in Washington. I got to tell you, the news cycle, it feels like it's moving at lightning speed these days. I can't believe it's only Thursday. We got all kinds of stuff that's happening that we have not yet had time to even talk about today. So I'm going to, I promise, touch on the two big things that I'm sure you know are leading the news today. One of those is the passage of the health care reform bill in the House of Representatives. Now, I'm literally just going to touch on it, and here's why.
We don't quite know everything that is in the bill. And we also don't exactly know what might happen when it goes to the Senate. So here's what happened. It did pass by a very slim margin, what I would describe as razor thin. They needed 216 votes and they got 217. It still needs to clear the Senate. And so if the Senate takes it up, it's certainly going to go through lots of changes before we have anything final. Here's what we do know. Some maybe just quick takes on the major components of the House bill. For conservatives, they're going to appreciate that it puts power into the hands of the states, allowing states to opt out of certain mandates and to opt out of certain coverage requirements. You are also going to imagine that that is seen as a criticism for others. For moderate Republicans, it provides money to help people with pre-existing conditions get coverage, although it's not totally clear how that works, and pre-existing conditions are also something that falls into that first category of things that states can adjust based on their own circumstances and issues. So I lift that up to say, in the near future, we will be talking more about healthcare reform and what's happening. For today, maybe it's enough for you to know that the government is in the our government is now fully in the business of healthcare. Like, if you thought that what was going to happen in all of this was that the U.S. government was going to get out of the healthcare business, that is not what has happened. So they're in it. They're in it maybe in a different way, but certainly still in it. Okay, the other major news out of Washington today is the signing of what I will loosely call a religious liberty executive order. President Trump signed this religious liberty executive order in the Rose Garden this morning. Let me tell you what leapt out at me when I saw the video. What leapt out at me was, wow, there are not very many people there for the signing of what should have been a great photo op for not only members of Trump's the crowd of people, the advisors that he is invited to be around him, his faith advisors. Most of those folks were certainly not in the picture, nor were all of the folks across the religious liberty advocacy spectrum whom you would think, hey, it's a religious liberty executive order. It's supposed to be President Trump making good on his promise to conservatives in the run-up to the election on the issue of religious liberty and increased protections. And those folks weren't there. Like, the folks who you might expect to see at a religious liberty executive order signing, I mean, other than it was fun to see some of the representatives of the Little Sisters of the Poor, other than that, you know, surprisingly few people present for this particular signing. So here's why. If you want to read some responses, some critiques of this executive order, David French has a blistering critique posted at National Review. But the Alliance for Defending Freedom, I mean, you know, these are attorneys who represent religious liberty cases across the country. The Alliance Defending Freedom represents religious liberty concerns when people end up in front of the Supreme Court. And the Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, in a statement that they issued on their website at adfmedia.org, they're not impressed. Basically, they say this executive order does not specifically address religious liberty concerns for those who, quote, were threatened with the effective closure of their family-run businesses for simply expressing a religious point of view on marriage that differed from that of the federal government. Now, let me put that in language that you and I would say, hey, this religious liberty, supposed religious liberty protection order, it doesn't protect the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker who don't want to use their God-given talents and gifts to support a marriage that falls outside of a biblical definition of appropriate sexual behavior. I'm just telling you, that's basically what we're talking about here. And so the executive order does not specifically address concerns by religious objectors in relationship to LGBTQ concerns. So the cake for the same-sex wedding, not covered. All right. So we are still going to continue to see the pharmacist, the therapist, the
anybody who is in has a small business and could be a professional, but for religious reasons does not want to provide a particular service because of an issue of conscience. The nurse who doesn't want to participate in an abortion, but whose hospital has just changed the rules, and that's now a part of the care that is provided to everyone. You're not going to be able to have a religious liberty claim based on, if you were thinking, hey, President Trump is on my side in this, and he is going to issue an executive order that's going to help me, that's not what happened. Now, this EO, this executive order, does say that the government will provide, quote, regulatory relief for groups like the Little Sisters of the Poor. You will remember that those were the nuns who were mandated into contraception coverage by Obamacare. The Supreme Court ruled in a related case affirming the position of Hobby Lobby that, no, in fact, you can't force individuals nor organizations to provide contraception in over and against their religious views. However, there's no actual specifics in the executive order in terms of how this regulatory relief for groups like the Little Sisters of the Poor is going to be provided. Now, it does address, this executive order does address something called the Johnson Amendment. Let me tell you, I've been in evangelical leadership in the United States for a number of years. Until Donald Trump started running for president and started voicing his commitment to do away with or utterly destroy the Johnson Amendment, I will tell you, this is not a subject of conversation that comes up in leadership circles that I'm a part of. So the people who are concerned about the Johnson Amendment apparently want to use their ministries as political advocacy platforms. I think that's actually contrary to the gospel. Right? I think the church is the bride of Christ. She ought to be wed to him, and she ought not be seeking to wed herself to certain political parties, or certainly not to individual political candidates. I think this is bad. I think that seeking to strip the Johnson Amendment, now if the Johnson Amendment is going to go down, which is actually, I don't have a problem if it gets stripped out legislatively, but that's the process that it should undergo. It's not something that should be done away with by one president. Why not? Because an executive order only stands as long as the executive who orders it. And so I want you to imagine just for a moment that churches use the liberty that supposedly this new executive order has given them in relationship to advocating on behalf of certain political candidates. Well, what if that certain political candidate doesn't get elected president the next time around? Don't you imagine that whoever does get elected president is going to put the enforcement, the teeth of enforcement right back into the Johnson Amendment, and they're just going to go after those churches that advocated for the political person that didn't get elected? Okay, this is bad. This is not what we want. The pulpit is only a place for politics in the sense that God has a lot to say about issues of justice. All right. God has a lot to say about sexuality. God has a lot to say about life and the dignity of the individual. God has a lot to say about work. God has a lot to say about money. And all of that is kind of political. But what the Bible resists against, and we should therefore resist as well, is the advocacy of a certain political party or a certain political person. The pulpit is a place for the proclamation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I just got to tell you, most pastors that I know, this is not a matter of the law of the United States saying they can't advocate for political candidates. This is a matter of conviction. All right. So just because there are some spiritual advisors telling Donald Trump that they want the opportunity to, you know, vocally advocate during campaign seasons for particular candidates, and therefore they need the Johnson Amendment removed so they don't have this like sort of Damocles hanging over them that the IRS might show up and strip away their not-for-profit status. I got to tell you, if you're functioning like a political action committee, then go be a political action committee. If you're going to be the church, if you're going to be a part of the bride of Christ, then be the advocate for Jesus Christ and let it go at that. And let the political advocacy people go do the political advocacy part. Again, most pastors I know, this is a matter of conviction. Most pastors I know do not feel the need to engage in this kind of politicking from the pulpit because that's not their call, and it's certainly not their role. So here's the other challenge that I see when we look at this issue. I want you to imagine for a moment that you are a pastor and that the Johnson Amendment has been stripped away, and now you've got, you know, either on the right or the left, it doesn't matter which, you have got what I will describe as well-heeled parishioners who think that a certain person should be advocated for from the pulpit. And they're going to tie their giving to the church on whether or not you stand in the pulpit and you advocate for their political candidate. And you're saying to yourself, well, that would never happen. Well, you've never been in a church. All right? So the layers of issues related to this, I think, are particularly troublesome. And I think that this is going to be a story that we are going to continue to be talking about in the days ahead, particularly because we haven't actually all seen the full content of the executive order that was signed today by the president. Again, the three things that the executive order covers: a promise to protect and vigorously promote religious liberty, but no information about how that's going to happen. A directive to, quote, ease restrictions on political activity by churches and charities. Now, that's going to happen, by the way. I love this particular language. They're going to actually have the IRS not be so vigorous in their enforcement, and they're asking IRS agents to use discretion. I got to tell you, I don't think we should be leaving it up to the discretion of IRS agents as to whether or not churches are actually preaching the gospel or whether or not they're proclaiming some political candidate. Like, this does not seem wise to me. So that's what's going on in the executive order related to religious liberty. And it's notable to me that there was a fairly large number of evangelical leaders last night at a private White House dinner, and yet they were not present in the Rose Garden when the executive order was signed this morning. I certainly hope that some of them will go public with why they were not there in the Rose Garden when the executive order was being signed. And I guess I would hope that they will tell us, you know, what's up, what's in it that they like and what's in it that they don't like, or what needed to be in it in order for them to be there. All right, friends, that's literally all we got time for today. Catch up with me online at reconnectwithcarmen.com. While you're there, sign up for the email. I'd love to communicate with you the other things that I'm thinking about. That's where I do it. Connect with us on Facebook, on Twitter. I'm at Carmen LaBurge. Have a great day. God bless.
The Reconnect is brought to you by the Presbyterian Lay Committee. To continue the conversation and become part of the Reconnect community, visit reconnectwithcarmen.com.